Hello, everyone. I hope you had a wonderful lunch. I'm here today to talk about the Velas Avese panorama. And first, I'll have a slideshow and then two short film clips. So first, we start with the slideshow. The Velas Avese panorama is located inside the Union Theater at 1122 West 24th Street in the historic West Adams District of Los Angeles. This theater was built in 1921, originally for a silent film theater, but it's also had some curious uses. It was a storefront church for a while. It was for a long time, about 30 years, the headquarters of a tile layers union, and they made some adaptions to the building, which I'll explain a little later. This is the lobby area of the theater. This is where visitors first enter. They can sign the guest book, and you can see our modest gift shop on the side. We have about five items right now, but and yes, of course, the panorama phenomenon is most prominently featured. So visitors will come from off of the street. We just had our grand opening at this location in July of 2007. And so we are now open on a regular basis, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 12 to 6. You will purchase a ticket to see our panorama and garden grounds. We're actually operating as a nonprofit organization, so our ticket is a suggested donation, but this is a copy of this ticket. And so the first thing, you will enter a long, dark hallway as a means to get to the panorama. This is continuing down the hallway. If you were to go straight, you would enter into the theater area of the building and then continue onwards to the garden. But turning to your left, there's an even darker hallway and a plaque saying Effulgence of the North. This is that hallway that you will then, getting your eyes adjusted to the dark, slowly encounter a circular stairway. And moving above, you'll get the first glimpse of icebergs and the exhibit of Effulgence of the North. So this is a nocturnal scene. It's in the evening. And this panorama's circumference is about 90 feet, which is, I think, something like 28 meters, if I've done the math correctly. And there's actually, in terms of adapting the panoramic model that was established in the 19th century, we're operating at a little bit of a smaller scale. And we also have added a subtly shifting light and sound cycle. So as you're inside of this panorama, the light is changing at sometimes more dramatically than others. At some points, it's on a loop of about 35 minutes, and at some moments, it's subtle enough that people have wondered, oh, was it really changing or is it just my eyes? And then at other times, it's much more dramatic. The sound cycle was created by an artist named Moritz Fair, and then the light was in collaboration with a woman named Paula Payne. So in a few areas, and this is showing the aurora borealis, there's an ultraviolet pigment, and that was something that is used in the, for the aurora effect. And so as part of the light cycle, there's UV light bulbs as part of the system. So these will flicker on and off, and that helps to create the illusion of the aurora fading in the darkness. So it's a bit difficult to see here, but there's sort of a low barrier which keeps you from jumping off the platform or falling off the platform, and also helps with keeping a sense of this distance where, you know, you can't quite get to the surface. This shows a little closer detail of some of the faux terrain work, which was done by a sculptor named Asami Morita, and this is mostly icebergs and some water, and it's sort of strange because you really can't document it and show everything at once. I mean, this is such the case with panoramas, so you have to come visit, please. And I particularly like the moments where the sculpture and the painting sort of blend together, and it's hard to tell where which one ends and the other begins. And I think that's part of what's so exciting about panoramas and the faux terrain element. So we had a grand opening July 21st. Imminent, effulgence of the north, grand unveiling and an alpine spectacular, an evening of alpine spectacle and a 360 degrees Arctic panorama, Saturday, July 21st, 2007. This took place initially in the theater portion of our building, and we had sort of a bit of a stage review to celebrate the event. Featured on the stage was Lauren Martzeller, who was our master of ceremonies, Tony Hartenstein, who is an expert yodeler and accordion player, and Professor Erki Hutamo, who many of you know, who gave a very special presentation, an illustrated lecture on Albert Smith's daring ascent of Mont Blanc, one of the most popular moving panoramas of all time, along with a magic lantern show featuring a musical interlude by the pianistic duo Hansel and Gretel playing L'Echo du Mont Blanc, a melodious tribute inspired by the immense popularity of the original Daring Ascent of Mont Blanc, and which has not been played before an audience in over 125 years. Well, it's been played now, but it was... So this is Erki set up with his magic lanterns. There's a bit of his presentation in the film clip, but these are some of the things from his collection that he adapted with a light so that he was able to project original magic lantern slides, but we didn't use any of the hazardous gas lights or anything, so we resorted to electricity in this case. This is Lauren Martzeller, our master of ceremonies. Among other things, he's a professional alphorn player. And this is Tony Hartenstein. Tony Hartenstein came to the United States for the 1939 World's Fair. He was to play accordion in the Swiss Pavilion, which he did. And then due to the wars, as we all know, he just stayed in the US. So he still goes back to visit, but he's been in Los Angeles for many years and he's just an amazing yodeler. And here he is entertaining guests. So after the stage show, there was a moment where Lauren Martzeller officially opened the panorama and people could begin to give their ticket to see the panorama. And then there was also more playing in the garden with the instruments. People enjoying. And another feature that we had was the Alpine Photo Studio. So this was just for this evening. A photographer named Ilan Schoenholtz, we made a setup where there was a backdrop painted and you could get your portrait taken as a souvenir of the evening. And there was a couple of costume items for available to use. So here's two examples of these photographs. So using these props and mountain climbing gear. And this is so that took place in the garden in the evening. This is a sample of the garden during the day. And the garden is on view as well as the panorama when we have our open hours. So there's some sort of strange, darkly colored plants. And one exhibit that we have is in this gazebo that we built is some carnivorous plants. So the garden is still, you know, in progress, but there are some things to see, and that's sort of a nice contrast from going to see this dark Arctic scene and then going outside and be in this other kind of invented landscape environment. This is a view of the garden from the other side, and this shows the back of the theater. And just as an example of some of the other things that we've used the theater for, aside from having our panorama and garden open to the public, the kind of entertainments and presentations that we have weave together a few different themes, but some of it is this pre-cinematic sorts of entertainment. So one group that we work with a lot is called Automata, and they did a production of Frankenstein that was a toy theater production. And this shows their setup. The stage was very small, and then there were two narrators also with musicians. And here's some of their setup. You can see Dr. Frankenstein is the one on the far right, and then these are reproductions of his monster. And then from the side, this is partly showing the setup. And this is Janie Geiser of Automata. Another presentation we did was an evening of early trick films from the turn of the century. You know, this is early on in cinema's history and, you know, just making things disappear. And it's funny how they're really still quite entertaining, even though they're sort of old tricks that we've all seen a million times. But these are projected on 16 millimeter by a man named Steve Anker, put the collection together. And this included films from various early filmmakers, Ladislav Starovich, Louis Ferlaud, and Ferdinand Zecca. And so one upcoming presentation, and also somebody who wanted to be here but was not, is Russell Potter, who many of you know. He's been working on this amazing book called Arctic Spectacles. When we sort of both discovered our converging interests in the Arctic, it was pretty amazing. Like, I was working on this project and then met Russell through email, and I was like, wow, you're writing a book about Arctic entertainments from the 19th century? That's what I'm so interested in. And so his book is coming out, and I think at the end of September. So he will be coming to, I'm sure, as well as other places, but he'll come to the panorama that we have in Los Angeles and do a presentation using some of his material and promote his book, and I'm really looking forward to that. So he has a website for his book, which is arcticspectacles.info. So you can even just, the site itself is pretty interesting and has a lot of material. And then if you wanted to order his book, you could find out that way. And so one thing Russell did do when I was doing some of the research for The Effulgence of the North, he forwarded me a lot of his material of research that was old documentation of engravings from, you know, the Illustrated London News and other sorts of this like 19th century fascination with the Arctic. And in a couple cases, I've taken quotes of his, or I guess they're not exact, they're from his collection. And in this case, here's just one example of something that I really quoted quite literally in the painting. So on the left is, I don't know how to say this, but Sartian's engraving based on a sketch of that Kane made of the graves of three of Franklin's crew. So this is part of trying to find, you know, what happened to Franklin's crew and when that exploration went sour or whatever. And then on the right is a moment from The Effulgence of the North painting, and they're pretty closely related, I think. And this is the Union Theater building at night. We were lucky enough to get some neon refurbished. So here we are on 24th Street. And I will show you first a video clip that is taken from the grand opening, just to give you more of a feeling of the atmosphere.
Professor Erkki Huhtamo, who will favor us with an historical presentation on Albert Smith's wildly popular moving panorama from the 1850s.
I basically come here from the 19th century as a time traveler. Let's look a little bit about Albert Smith's influences.
So that short film was put together by Claire Didier. And then this is a short film showing the effulgence of a north. So one thing I should say about the sound element is that Moritz Fehr, who created it, it's in 8 channels, and part of the idea is to use the sound element to create a sense of immersion so that even without the image, the way the sound is operating gives the feeling of being inside of a space. And another thing is that some of the sounds that you hear that are mixed into what he created, there's a man named Stephen P. McGreevy who, among other people, goes out into the field and makes recordings of the Earth's atmosphere. And so there are some very strange sounds that you hear which coincide with when the aurora borealis is manifested, the northern lights. And so these sort of strange, like, popping sounds that, I mean, they almost sound like something cartoonish from outer space. Well, that's really what they are. It's sounds from outer space that are happening when the aurora occurs. So those have been mixed into other sound elements that Moritz himself recorded. So this panorama will be on view for at least 2 years, probably a little longer. The first time we started researching funding, it's been since 2001 to get this one going. So we'll leave it up for a little while. But please come to Los Angeles and visit. Oh, the size is about a 90-foot circumference, so I believe that's about 28 meters. The height is maybe it varies a little, but it's about 12 feet high. So what is that, 4 meters-ish? I don't know. 3.5, okay, thank you. I worked on the backdrop painting myself, and then there were other people working on the terrain, like Sammy Morita was the lead sculptor for that, and she did some painting of the terrain as well. And then also a guy named James Gross-Didier did some of the sculpting. Roscoe Posada was our main construction and engineer and did a lot of the detailed architectural work. But as far as the backdrop painting, it was pretty much just me.
How do you interact with the panorama and the 19th century magic shows? Like, are people enthusiasts, or are they kind of curious about it beyond the role of journalists? What's the relationship between people and these spectacles?
Well, the opening was the first time that we did a magic lantern show, and it was really popular, and actually we had a really great turnout for the opening, and so much that I was thankful that the fire department didn't show up because it was that crowded. And so people seem to really enjoy the magic lanterns, which I think is so great because it is this kind of, you know, simple technology in many ways, but also really complex when you think about the kind of animation that they invented. And as far as the panorama exhibit, it's just been open since July, so we're still sort of getting the feeling back. It's interesting because I think the way that this is operating is, well, obviously quite different than the panoramas of the 19th century, and in some ways it's almost an inverse, because my impression is that, you know, when people would see these panoramas in the 19th century, there's sort of just this overwhelming capacity and just, wow, it's huge, and oh my gosh, what a spectacle. And in some ways, the effulgence of the north is something like a little bit more meditative and quiet, and in some ways is underwhelming rather than overwhelming. And so for some people that's a little bit difficult because it's like, oh, it's just a painting on the wall, like that kind of thing. Although for others it's really not that, because you know, you get this sort of strange feeling of space that's a little bit disorienting, but sort of pleasurably disorienting because it feels otherworldly. So I think there's a range of responses, and we're still learning more. Well, I guess the next thing will be Russell Potter's presentation about his book and some of the 19th century Arctic explorations. We will be continue to be having events, and I'm hoping to put together more of Arctic, tangentially Arctic related things, and I would definitely love to have Erki do another presentation if he's willing.